spanning sea throughout the solar system and extending to interstellar regions beyond. This is the Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm here because you have a right to know, and I'm here because you matter. Now, over the weekend, we had something we called Seminar Saturday, and we had good response to that. As I predicted, I've gotten some email from people since then saying, well, you know, you should have announced it. I didn't hear about it. I didn't know about it. I'm so sorry. I can only announce it each and every show and publish it in the K-Files. I don't know what else to do. But anyway, we did have good response, and a lot of people attended, and they got in on a very special treat, and that is three of the hottest, most requested seminars that we've ever done. And there are more, but those three are the hot ones, the ones that everybody talks about and requests. And so we did that. But we had to do some software changes to be able to do that. And I won't go into all the technical details, but there were some software changes that had to be made in order for us to do Seminar Saturday. And those who are watching our TV channel tonight know from looking at the TV channel, you know that the deal is that we are, you didn't get to see the beginning, you know, the intro as per usual. And so, you know, it's kind of different. It's a little bit different. But you know what? It's okay. It is different tonight, but it is okay. And the reason I say that it's okay is because, you know, there's not anything strange other than you didn't get to see the intro. And probably the breaks will be a little bit different. But anyway, it was really, really good, and I appreciate everyone who attended. And I hope that if you did not attend, I hope you will listen very, very carefully to each and every show, because each and every show, if we have something like that coming up, I do announce it. And pay attention to the announcements. Okay, tonight we have with us Jerry and Kathy Wills. They'll be joining us in just a little bit. And they'll be speaking to us from Peru. Now, pardon me for some of the pauses and delays in my speech, because I'm still fighting some of these software issues. The situation is that they have been in... Jerry, just nod your head if it's okay for me to say where you've been. Okay. Yeah, they've been in Bolivia, And the last time that I talked with them, they were on top of a mountain in Bolivia. They're now back in Peru. And pretty exciting news in the update. All right, we're going to take a break, and we shall return right after this break. All of the music used here at the Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists. Most of it from independent artists at musicalley.com. Go over to musicalley.com. Check out thousands of artists and thousands of great indie tunes. Musicalley.com. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guests this evening, Jerry and Kathy Wills. As I said, Jerry and Kathy have been over in Bolivia, and if you were listening or watching on, it was either Friday or Thursday. We had an update from them. He called me via satellite phone from the top of a mountain where they had made a discovery. Couple of discoveries, actually. They discovered what they were looking for had been taken, had been removed. And then they discovered something else. And it was pretty cool to hear it, you know, right from the scene. But tonight we're going to talk with them. They've returned to Peru, and they are going to share with us some photographs as well as an update. But for those of you who are wondering, well, who is Jerry Wills and who is Kathy Wills? Jerry and Kathy Wills are Expeditions TV. Jerry is also the associate host of this show, but they are together, Expeditions TV. And Jerry and Kathy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kevin. Can you hear us all right?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Yeah.
Okay, let's... We've gotten some updates on the entire expedition, and at this point, the expedition really is pretty much concluded, isn't it? You're just awaiting the arrival of your airplane to come back home, right?
That's pretty much it. We have tickets to fly back on the 6th, so we're just basically finalizing a few things here in Lima, repacking cargo bags. You know, putting things back the way they were when we left from the States.
A lot of fun, huh?
Not really. Yeah. Trying to make sure the bags all weigh about 50 pounds piece.
Yeah, we have, well, we have three cargo bags that are full of tents, camping gear, cooking equipment, solar chargers, just all kinds of stuff, so we can live in the outback without any outside support, you know, food and the whole thing. Plus, you know, our personal things, our clothes. We each have a bag, cargo bag, with our clothes, boots, rain gear, that sort of thing. And then we have three different, they're not really bags, but they're equipment carriers for cameras, charging systems, you know, all of that. So it's, we wanted to travel light, but we could not travel as light as I would like to have, simply because where we went, we didn't know what we would have, if anything, to depend upon, so we had to bring everything that we thought we might need. The only thing I forgot was an extension cord.
And did you need one?
I needed one tonight. Yeah. We're kind of squeezed into a space here because we have a 1 meter long accessory cord that goes into the wall. Uh-huh. And I just forgot to pack. We've got all kinds of extension cords, 15 foot long extension cords and such, but I just forgot to pack it.
So right now what you're doing is the wrap-up stuff, and that is to repack everything. And then on the 6th, I believe you said, you fly back to the United States, right?
Yeah. We have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and get to the airport by 5, I think 5:04, I forget. Anyway, the plane leaves about 7, so we have to get there early. It does. A regular taxi won't take all these cargo bags, if you like a van, and then get into the airport, check in, and fly on home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a crazy ride. You know, we have had so many 3 and 4 o'clock in the mornings get up, just take off and run, and really run to the point of exhaustion. A lot of times we don't even have time to eat. We have peanut butter packs and Ritz crackers, and that is a supplement for us when we can't find the time to really stop. And, you know, the thing is, some of these places we go, like when we called you on Friday, we had a piece of bread and a cup of coffee, and we left at 10 in the morning. And we went for 12 and a half hours with just, you know, a couple packets of peanut butter and some crackers and water, and that was about it. And we just went and went and went. And this has been quite exhausting. But I think the end result is we're going to have some video that a lot of folks are going to find quite interesting.
Let me say to the audience that you need to, if you haven't figured it out, you need to realize they are in Peru. They are in a hotel. The internet connection is there, but there, it's not, you know, wide bandwidth, and from time to time there's a little glitch in the sound or a little glitch in the video. While we were setting up earlier today, there were big glitches where we got cut off and we had to reconnect. That could happen during the show, but that's the way it is when you're talking with folks who are in other parts of the world and things are not exactly matching what you're doing here technologically. All right, so why did you go to Bolivia?
Oh, what a story. Well, you know, we had announced on the show a couple of weeks ago, I think. At least we announced, I think it was on this show, but I know we at least announced on the Facebook page that we were following a story that was really huge. It was a story that was really mind-boggling in its scope and nature. Part of that story has to do with people that came to South America thousands and thousands of years ago, and we've got a pretty good idea now of what happened. We have an ancient map and so forth. But the reason we went to Bolivia, Kevin, is because there were two stories there we wanted to cover specifically, actually three. One was a bowl that was found in the Altiplano, and again, in the middle of nowhere. It was called the Magna Fuerte, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And this bowl has two different languages on it. One is an ancient Semitic language, which means the only way that could have gotten here is because someone from the Middle East was here and shared their language. That's something scientists know about and they've been working on for quite a while. The other issue we were trying to resolve, when we were down here 5 years ago, there was a guide that we had who told us that there was a footprint. He wasn't very, very clear, so we couldn't be clear when we were talking about it to others, including to your audience. It was made to sound like there was a footprint or a set of footprints that was in sandstone, and it was on some island in Lake Titicaca. Well, Kathy has since been researching this and just trying to track it down, not knowing when we would ever get back to Bolivia. When it came to the point where we knew we were going, she was going through her notes and came across a couple pieces of information that pointed us again towards Bolivia and towards his footprint. I think Kathy could probably tell you more if you want to hear it. But essentially, she discovered the name of a village. And again, it's in the middle of nowhere. You'd have to see this to really understand. It's just, there's nothing there except little villages dotted across this vast frontier wilderness at 13,000 feet and higher. She came across the name of a village, and that's where this footprint was supposed to be. Well, there isn't any information really out there in the public that talks about this, shows you any more than a picture, and it does any more than tell you a little bit, and that's all you can find. So we decided we wanted to find this. We had spoken to Michael Cremo when I was hosting the show, and in your absence, I spoke to him about this, and he didn't have any information either, but he's very interested. So we decided we would find it. Kathy did, and we spent Friday going across places where there was hardly any road, ended up where the road ends in a village that was just the most picturesque thing you've ever seen. And the villagers said, on top of that mountain, that's where the footprint is at. So we put our camera equipment on, our bags, hauled everything up the side of this mountain, and went up to check it out.
Now, you told us when you called us from that mountaintop that mm-hmm. it was an almost vertical climb.
You know, in places it was very, very steep. In other places, it was just a steep upward climb, about like this. I mean, if you can, 45 to 55 degree angle. Some places, it was 75, 80 degree angle. It was very steep in some places. Anyway, it was a long climb.
A very long climb.
You know, when you're at 13,000 feet and you start going up, this mountain started at what was about 3,200 meters,
mm-hmm.
and it topped out at 4,000 meters. So we just scrambled up there, huffing and puffing the whole way. And we got to where there had been a fence erected around where this footprint was supposed to be. It's pretty exciting. I mean, after hours and hours of driving and asking people and stopping and asking more people, well, where is it? They never heard of this place. Mm-hmm. The name of the place in Kathy's lead said Sulka Titi, but it wasn't. It was Sulku Tiri, which is a big difference. It's Aymara. And finally, we stopped and asked this this couple standing beside the road waiting for a wagon to come by and pick them up. They said, oh yeah, it's just right over there. You see, go over there, go up that road and just go as far as you can and then stop and then go on. So we did, and that's where it was at. And unfortunately, we were able to find it. Well, we found where it's supposed to be. And that's the other part of the story, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm interested in, Kathy, your research. I mean, where do you even start looking for this kind of obscure information?
Well, I'm pretty lucky at using keywords on the internet and then just look through pages and pages and pages. And I found some of the information on a blog that had a old article about it.
Mm-hmm.
And had the information of one of the spellings of the village where it was. Mm-hmm. And this footprint in the article, they said that the villagers worshipped this rock because it had it was evidence that their ancestors had been there, and so it was very important to them. And so that's why we thought it was a really cool thing to go check out and see, because nobody else has ever been there except for archaeologists, and they kept the information pretty secretive because they were studying it, and they didn't want anybody to know where it was so they could study it.
Well, we also had been told by one of the lead archaeologists, and this was back, gosh, after we were here 5 years ago, so it was within a year of that. I don't remember the guy's name, but he said that the villagers will let you get near it anyway. It is on an island in Lake Titicaca, which was a lie. He said that the National Geographic, the cable station, Nat Geo, had paid the villagers a large sum of money to not talk about it and to keep people away. So that, of course, just made us want to go all the more.
Well, before we get too far from it, let me make an observation about the wrong spelling. You know, like you, I've been to lots of places on the planet, and one of the things that I've found is that English-speaking people have a sort of, well, I don't give a damn arrogance about the way they treat other people's language. Not everybody, but I mean in a lot of cases, that's how they do it. And so they'll just make up a spelling for something that they can't even pronounce. And then when you try to do research later, the thing they spell doesn't exist, and it's hard to find it, you know. And an example, is, let me ask you, you're familiar with Belgrade?
Mm-hmm.
Belgrade? There's no such place. It is Beograd. B-E-O-G-R-A-D, Beograd. So some English-speaking person that had a, well, I don't give a damn, attitude and couldn't say Beograd came up with Belgrade. Well, there is no such place as Belgrade. It's Beograd. And if you start looking on world maps as opposed to English maps, it's going to be spelled Beograd. And now, well, that's a real simple one, and we know that. But what if somebody in some other language couldn't say New York, so they called it Nawak? And they spelled N-A-W-A-K.
We found out later that the Amara people also do change the name of places on their own, amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then people don't know what it's called, just like you said.
Well, now, that's an excellent way for them to hide stuff on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sure.
It is. But, you know, it really is. I've been in situations where I had a map and was trying to get to some place in a foreign country, and I'm looking at a map that's done all in English, and what they have spelled ain't there on the road. And so it's irritating. It really is. Okay, so you get over there. Well, I'll tell you what, we have a break coming up. So what we're going to do is we'll take a break, and then when we come back from the break, we'll get into what you actually found that was disappointing, and then what you actually found that was exhilarating on top of the mountain over in Bolivia. But I also want to talk about La Paz, Bolivia itself. It's in a interesting place, and it creates some interesting conditions that are not too pleasant. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we will return in just a moment and get those answers and information. We'll be back.
You'll never win in this
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guests this evening, Jerry and Kathy Wills. When we went away for break, I had been asking Jerry and Kathy about the, you know, you crawl up this very steep mountain, and it takes a long time to get up there, and we heard, you know, a lot of huffing and puffing, because you apparently had just gotten up there when you called us. But you get up there, and there's the fence with the footprint that you're looking for. Now, folks, this footprint is, you could say, fossilized. I mean, whoever did it stepped in mud, but then it turned to sandstone over time. And and it's supposed to be over a million years old. It's like 1.2, 1.5 million years old. And so you get up there and you peer over into the area where the fence is, and what do you see?
Well, go ahead, Kat.
Well, there's just a space where the footprint used to be. There's a cut out of the stone.
What's
gone?
What you have is a imagine like
Well, your audio has frozen.
All 15.
Yeah, folks, we're having some internet problems here. Jerry, go ahead. I think it's reestablished.
Okay. This imagines a pizza roll that's about 20 foot long.
Okay.
That has a few cracks in it. It's very smooth. It's sandstone. It's petrified. And you're looking down. There's some weeds growing up around it. But there is a slot that's cut, and a piece is obviously gone. And after climbing this mountain, and we were huffing and puffing.
It was awful. I stopped about 10 times going up that mountain just to catch my breath and get my heart back down to normal.
So we're looking at this, we're going, well, damn. What's this all about?
Yeah.
Are we in the right place? What's going on here? And, you know, why would they have a fence around this on top of a mountain? You know, why? I mean, obviously, this has been cut out with a saw.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going, you've got to be kidding me. After all we've gone through, after all these years, after all this effort and getting here, and it wasn't cheap, it's gone. And it was like, so I'm videotaping where it used to be. I'm going around, and our guide, he's a small fellow. He's probably comes a little bit above my waist. Pulled the fence up and crawled under there. He's pulling weeds and he's looking for it. And he's going, Mr. Jerry, it's not here. So, well, I'll be darned. So, I figure, okay, well, then we're going to give the story that it's gone.
Yeah.
So I start filming. While I'm filming, Kathy had a brilliant idea.
Well, I figured, you know, if there was one, there might be more. So I just started walking away from it, the other direction, looking around and stuff with the guide. And lo and behold, probably, I don't know, how far away was it?
It was on the other side of the mountain. You were following that strata.
Yeah, sandstone. We followed the strata of sandstone. And we found another footprint, and it was in the footprint, excuse me, it looked like it was that they stepped in mud. You know, your heel goes down, your toes grab, and you take another step.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like sand. It was more like Kathy says, mud and sand mixed, perhaps.
Yeah, and the other one in the picture, that the archaeologist had of the one that was gone, it was more like when you walk on a beach and you step in the sand, but you don't completely submerge into it. You don't have to you know, how do you do that?
I like moist sand.
Yeah, a moist sand.
It's pretty well packed.
Yeah.
So, and this footprint that we were after is unmistakable. I mean, it's just absolutely pristine looking. It's so good, in fact, that a lot of people thought it was fake, that they had done this so that the people there, perhaps, had done this in order to get some tourism. But that's ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, one little footprint to look at.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But okay. This one,
go ahead and describe the new one.
Yeah, the new one, well, Kathy found it. Go ahead and describe it.
Well, you can see the shape of the arch and the heel and the picture, well, taking the pictures of it, it looks like, you know, it's kind of cut out, but it really isn't, because it's just the way over, you know, millions of years, I guess, is the way the rock had broken away from it. But you can see the toes prints of how you would just, you know, you step in something really muddy.
And like these streaks where
the toes would go. And the side of the arch and the heel is very pronounced. You can tell the heel really easily.
Yeah, the arch from the ball of the foot in the front back towards the heel. But looking at it, it's very clear. It comes in like you expect the arch of left foot to come in. It has this rise to it, like the arch had rested and only gone so deep. The ball of the foot, the toes. But because it was in, you know, like more of a mud and sand than just sand, it didn't leave as perfect a casting as the original footprint that we'd gone after had looked like.
Mm-hmm.
But still, and you know, the pictures that we sent to you, that the way it looks like it's broken, and the cleavage there is like almost right angles.
Uh-huh.
The reason is because that is another type of stone over this that has more sand in it, and it has natural fracture lines.
Mm-hmm.
So this piece of stone, as you see, is looking so square, is actually another layer that's on top of where the footprint is just under it. And, you know, that has broken in time along natural fracturing lines. But boy, the footprint itself, it's just...
Yeah, folks are looking at the picture that you sent me. And now I'm going to... You sent me a couple of pictures where you're back away from it. So we get a little bit of the sense of the size of it. What does that be, about a size 9, size 10 in American sizes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Our guide?
Yeah, he put his foot in it, and his foot fit pretty much perfectly in the space. And he said he wears a size 38 UK, you know, measurements.
European,
and so that figures out to be a 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
The size and shape, it corresponds to the piece that was missing from the information that we have.
All right, but this one is it older or is it younger or is it about the same age as the one that's missing?
Well, you know that we're not geologists. It's not possible for us to really make that kind of determination. However, because it's in the same strata, this footprint would be leading more, let's say, from the way you're looking at me right now, it would be going off in this direction. So be in this, and you can see on the picture the direction. It would be going towards the other footprint. We think that this footprint is probably older by maybe an hour, you know, it's still older, but older by a short time than the other footprint. We don't have any way of knowing really, but I mean, it's kind of fun to think about. But this, we think, is at least as old as the other. And incidentally, Bolivia has a press release that says it's somewhere between 5 and 15 million years old. the 1.2, 1.5 million year old estimate was actually issued by someone who has not really looked at the footprint at all. They just gave an estimate based upon the layer of sandstone and the period that the sandstone would have actually been sand before the Andes rose to the point they are at now.
Well, okay, so somewhere between 1 million and 15 million.
Yeah, and that's a very broad stroke. We don't know. You know, it'd be nice if we could find out more specifically, but I don't know that anyone really could find out. You know, when you're measuring rocks, you're measuring the age, the composition, and so forth. So I don't know, but I'm sure that it's at least 1.5 million years old. And this is in the same strata. The way Kathy found this is by following that strata on the exposed part on the other side of the mountain. There's like a, remember when we were talking, so she's coming up a cliff?
Yeah.
Well, right where I was standing, and you'll see in the video when you eventually see it.
Kind of went like this.
Yeah, it kind of went over like this and then down. And it exposed this area where the sandstone was at, and she followed that around. It only stands to reason if they were walking and it's sandstone, they didn't just stand there and then vanish. They had to have come from somewhere and gone somewhere. And that was the logic she was using, the reasoning that led her to find this other one. There's actually a third, but the third one was so decomposed, it was really sketchy.
It was really kind of hard to tell if it was really a footprint or not.
Yeah, it's we've got that on video as well.
All right,
but I didn't pay a lot of attention to it.
One of the pictures that you sent me looks like you're standing on top of the mountain looking out down on the village below. Is that what we're looking at in that picture?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's right.
And when you went back down to the village and told them that, hey, that footprint is gone, what did they tell you?
Remember that old fellow? He was bringing his donkeys across the field. He had no shoes on, feet like leather. Very friendly guy, 71 years old. And so we said, he wanted to know what we were doing. He said, well, you know, we went up there, and he only spoke Aymara, so it wasn't like I was talking to him. I was talking to him through an interpreter. And he says, oh, well, he says, I don't know, 2 years ago, maybe longer, some men came here and they went up there. We didn't know who they were, but they went up there and they came down about 7 hours later, and then they got in their vehicles and left. So we went to go see, because I mean, where his farm is, you're looking at him like I'm looking at the camera right now. You turn like this, and it's right up there on top of that hill. There's nothing between you and it except hill. So he went up there to see what they'd done, because it had a fence around it at that time. And he said he saw that it was gone. He says, I don't know who these men were, and I don't know where it went. So he told the other men of the village, and they were all upset. And they said, well, who would have come and taken this? The common idea is that, oh, it's someone from the government, you know, the archaeologist, who knows who. And so it was just gone. And they, like Kathy had said, they didn't worship this, but it was a sacred site to them. They would put offerings up there and say prayers and things to their ancestors, you know, hello to the ancestors, you know, who made these footprints.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll pick up there when we come back, and got some more stuff we need to talk about. We'll be back, folks.
That's Some things are true. It's just me that you're trying to talk to. The closer you get, the harder I fall. I would do anything, anything at all. I would swim across the ocean, fly to the moon. I would walk a thousand miles just to get to you. I would walk a thousand miles just to get to you. I'm relieved to hear your name. The same old stories, nothing else has changed. I'm picking up where we left off. It seems like forever since we've been apart. I would swim across the ocean, I fly.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guests this evening, Jerry Wills and Kathy Wills. And Jerry, we were talking about the reaction of the villagers when they found out that this sacred footprint had been removed. They were not happy about it, right?
Well, they weren't. There was a couple we talked to that were pretty alarmed by it. The old fellow that I just was telling you about, he knew it was gone, and he told the other men of the village, the other people we talked to were women, so maybe they didn't communicate with their men. I don't know what the deal was. But no, they were pretty alarmed, and they didn't know what had happened to it. It was just gone. But you have to understand that in a place like this, the government is going to come in and do whatever they want without asking, without telling. They just do it. And from what we were able to find out since we contacted you by sat phone, is that, yeah, so apparently some archaeologists had shown up. They'd gone up there, cut this out of the sandstone, and took it to a museum in La Paz, where it was supposed to be on display at the cultural museum. We don't know if it is on display or not, because we found out about it after we got back to Lima. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's just too bad that they didn't have any respect for those folks. However, because Kathy found this other footprint, we told this fellow that it was there. We also sent out a beacon from our Spot Connect to pinpoint within a foot or so of exactly where it was. I had spots sitting right on the footprint. So it's just right, should be just almost dead center, right? We've tried this in the past and it's been like within a foot of where we, on Google Earth. So this fellow now knows that there is another footprint up there. They can again go and do offerings to it if they want to. It can be another revered item for them. And, you know, if it goes missing, well,
what can you do?
What can you do?
Yeah. Well, they had a lot of archaeologists going up there and studying it. And even one of the archaeologists paid to have the fence put around it so it was protected. And so I don't know. I don't think it was the same archaeologist that put up the fence that took it.
It was one that I spoke with.
But so they were trying to protect it. Some of the archaeologists were.
Now, you guys were also on the trail of this huge, huge story. And there, I know, folks, we have spoken in very cryptic terms, and you want to know what it is, but I cannot tell you, and Jerry will not tell you until he thinks it's time. And but you had a connection for that in La Paz, is that right?
Actually, outside of La Paz. Mm-hmm. I can give you kind of a brief idea. And the reason I don't want to go into a lot of detail is because we don't have the computers and the maps and really the work power that we need in order to really construct this in a comprehensive manner. So what I'm going to tell you, it's sketchy until Kathy, really, because she's the brains behind the research. But when we get to the point where we actually can put pins in the map, what we have here, Kevin, are details that are very random and obscure. For example, the Trojan War. There were refugees from the Trojan War, but at one time there was it was like that was a myth. There never was really a Troy. There never was really a Trojan War. And then they found evidence that there was. There were refugees from that time period. Those people had an affiliation with King Solomon. King Solomon, who knows where he got his information, but he had access to tremendous amounts of gold and jewels. They can't be found in that quantity where he was. Those gold and jewels came from South America, we're pretty sure. The Trojans, as best as we know right now, and these are all bits and pieces of the abstract puzzle that we've been assembling. And there really are documents and proofs about these things I want to tell you, but we don't have it assembled into a very clear picture. So that's what I want the viewers and the listeners to understand. We don't have this in an absolute precise picture yet. But here's a general overview. For example, the Trojans, they went somewhere. Nobody really knows where these refugees went. The Israelites, they left Egypt. They went into the desert, and it's all kind of a blur what happened after that, 40 years in a desert and so on. But we see that they have gone to, for example, Great Britain. We found evidence of that. Not us, but John Tudor from Coastal Computing in Spain. He's the one he and his wife Sally are phenomenal individuals. Mm-hmm. They helped design the expeditions.tv new website. And they've been our research partners on this the whole way through. Sally is an anthropologist and archaeologist, and she's a genius. So is John, for that matter.
Well, we do know that in the time of Jesus, Israel was carrying on tin trade with Great Britain. They were going there and purchasing tin and bringing it back.
Well, you also have the Phoenicians who are going from Phoenicia to South America. We have evidence of that. They were looking for copper and silver. We also have evidence that the Vikings were in South America. They were in South America, perhaps ahead of the Trojans. So now you've got all these abstract pieces where we do have proofs of all these things, but we don't have a timeline. Now let's introduce a whole new paradigm that happens hundreds of years later. And that has to do with Friday the 13th and the Knights Templars. They left and they were never heard from again. But we all know, or at least we think we know, that they had access to some of the most extraordinary information that would be found on Earth at that time, and probably even up to this point in time. They had access to religious and sacred artifacts, but they just vanished. And when they left France, they were never heard from again. We think that not in mass, but parts of them went to South America, to the same place that King Solomon had been getting his gold and jewels and taking their treasure with them. I mean, Oak Island up in, was it Nova Scotia? Mm-hmm. I think that's where some of the Knights Templars went. Into the Yucatan, farther down, but we do have an ancient map from the Knights Templars showing them landing in Brazil and going across to Alto Peru, which is now known as Bolivia. So we have various pieces of evidence, and these pieces are showing us a picture that is so mind-boggling and astonishing. Because we've all been wondering how in the world were these amazing blocks of stone cut? Why do we see similar patterns in the Middle East and elsewhere showing the same methods of blocks being cut and constructed, held together with rivets, just all kinds of similarities? How is it that this is possible? Well, it's possible because the same group of intelligent people who were passing this information down generation to generation, they found refuge in a brand new place on Earth that had very few people who were as skilled or intelligent as they were at the time. And now we have maps that show the route that they took from Brazil to Peru and Bolivia and most likely to Ecuador. So it's just an amazing story, Kevin. And we don't want to release absolute details. We want to create a map with pins and a map and dates so that we can show this very precisely, so it isn't like we're making something up, and have reference points so that anyone can go and take a look at the references. And when you do, you'll be able to see exactly what we saw. These abstract pieces of information that Kathy and Sally Tudor were able to assemble in pieces and create a story that has never been told.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, after this break, and we have some more information, and then we'll open the phone lines. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guests this evening, Jerry Wills and Kathy Wills. And they're speaking to us live from Peru. Last time we talked to them, they were on top of a mountain in Bolivia. Now they are back in the comforts of a hotel room in Lima. And we're talking about some pretty amazing discoveries they have made and stories they are following in that region of the world. Jerry, I want to go back to the footprint for a moment. I thought of a couple of things that I haven't addressed. Now, a couple of things about the whole area there. Now, you sent me a picture of this bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now this bowl, you said, has Semitic writing on it. Do we know what brand of Semitic?
Well, I'm not sure that we know what it is. If a person were to look this bowl up, you would find information on the internet with a translation of what it has to say. I don't have it memorized, so I don't want to even attempt it. But you can look it up online and you'll find the information and the entire story. Our point of going there was to try and get much better pictures than what we had seen on the internet. And there are some pretty good pictures on the internet, but there's no video. So we went there to do that.
Okay. Now,
almost got arrested.
You almost got arrested. We want to hear about that. I've been arrested in foreign countries. That's fun. Tell us about it.
We didn't almost get arrested.
Well, they were watching us on a camera.
They have a camera right by the bowl. And we started taking pictures, and they didn't like that at all. They were there. The minute I did a little click, there was a guy right behind me and saying, No pictures.
I had the video camera out, mm-hmm. and I'm setting it up, you know, getting adjusted, and I'm going to just start shooting video. Well, I figured it's a lot easier to get forgiveness than it is to get permission.
Yeah.
Didn't quite seem that way. And you know, there was a point there where we got hauled in front of the guy that ran the place. They were talking back and forth between him and the police that were standing there and our guide, who was nervous. And I thought we were going to lose the camera and I might be going to jail. But as it turned out, none of that happened. We just said, okay, well, we're going to go for coffee. You guys figure it out. We'll talk to you later. And we got out of there. I had thought that I had pushed the button to do the recording. So I walked all the way around the bowl with the camera just very cleverly in my hand. And the red light doesn't flash on our camera. I turned that off. Took a look at the camera when we got a safe distance away. And it had been on standby the whole time. So I wasn't going to go back and try again.
Uh-huh.
We really were trying to get permission. We wanted to talk to officials there because Sally Tudor is an anthropologist, an archaeologist, and she could have taken a look at that. John, her husband, John Tudor, he's right up there with her, you know, very keen into this. We also have a good friend, Marshall Payne, who is the president of the Epigraphical Society. They know languages like nobody's business. Marshall Payne is quite good at this, probably the world's experts on it. So we want to get this information. We thought, well, you know, they've got this translation. Is it really accurate? Maybe we can get these folks to take a look and contribute to what's known. But there wasn't anybody that was interested. There wasn't anyone that wanted to meet with us and get paperwork done and red tape cleared and payoffs and so forth. Exhausting. So,
well, it would have taken probably weeks, and we didn't have weeks. We had a couple hours.
So it
didn't happen.
Well,
so
so you got one picture, though, right? The one you sent us?
Yeah, the one you've got, which really, you know, there are better pictures on the internet.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fascinating. It's like this big. I mean, you can't tell how big that is, I suppose. But it's probably, what, about 3 foot across? 2.5, 3 foot across?
I'd say maybe about a foot and a half.
No, it's bigger than
no.
that.
No. They were, when they found it, apparently it was being used to feed the pigs.
Oh, yeah.
It was a pig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, the scientific community, you know, said, oh, this is a fake. You know, just mm-hmm. a fake.
It's in pretty good condition for having pigs eating out of it, though.
Well, it's stone.
So the scientific community says it's a fake, but it's in a museum.
Yeah. Well, at first they said it was fake.
You know, later they said, well, this is still a fake. How could you have Semitic writing in Bolivia?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it didn't fit into the timeline that's
putting. Well, you guys have heard my rant about that. A thing is what it is, no matter where it is. You know, you walk into a church and there's a beach ball on the altar. Would you say, well, it can't be a beach ball because it's in a church? No, you wouldn't. You would say, what is a beach ball doing in the church? You know, but when it comes to strange things in archaeology, or if it comes to strange things on other planets, that's exactly what they do. And they use a line of reasoning that is not used anywhere else in any other line of business ever. A thing is what it is, regardless of where it is. And, you know, but this is a good example, folks. It's the reason I'm doing a mini rant now. This is a good example of what I'm talking about when I do those rants, because it's the great apes trying to keep you from knowing the truth. Okay, that's what it is. This is stuff from the forbidden zone. The great apes don't want you to know about. That footprint you found is also from the forbidden zone, and the great apes don't want people to know about that, as is evidenced by the fact they came and took the other one away.
Well, sure. And you know something, Kevin, there are going to be people who are going to take a look at the evidence that we have, which isn't, you know, like the absolute best evidence a person could have. Archaeologists should do that. That's why we go and look for these things, to send archaeologists out there so they can validate these things. But they'll take a look at it and go, nah, that doesn't look like anything. Or you're making it up, or it's been made, or, you know, fill in the blanks. Mm-hmm. I saw it. It's a footprint.
Well, the audience have...
There's no doubt.
In person, it's... You know, pictures sometimes just doesn't give it the look. No,
the depth.
The depth, yeah. Uh-huh. But it really is a footprint.
Well, we shot this in HD, 30 frames a second, and we got it from all angles. It is going to show up really nice and really clear on a high-definition TV set. It's going to be just absolutely amazing to see. You'll be able to see what we saw. It'll be that clear.
Now, I understand news of this find has begun to ripple out around the world, and it's creating a little bit of a stir, right?
Well, it seems to be. There are people that are, you know, like I said, they're in it's a mixed bag. So far, I think people are just sort of shocked and stunned. Uh-huh. We were supposed to put out a press release today, and we didn't get it written because we had some things happen that were troubling. Got kicked out of our hotel room. So it took me the rest of the day to figure out what to do. But, it's starting to ripple out. And I think that there's, just like anything, you know, it's like, oh, really? Are you kidding? And then it'll get to the point where, well, maybe this is. Uh-huh. So what we're trying to accomplish with putting out information, like I said, we're not trying to prove it. Send an archaeologist in there, have them do a casting, get a stone sample for a geologist to test, study this thing and make a determination. Is it really what we think it is? I mean, it looks for the world like a footprint. There's just no mistaking it, right down to the toes, mm-hmm. The arch of the foot, the heel. But let the people who are in this genre, who have spent their lives validating and researching, have them do it. We found it. Now it's their turn to go and study it. Mm-hmm. That's why we do these things.
You sent me a picture also of what looks like the ruins of a church. What's that all about?
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
It is.
You know, it's a very old church. Got some good video of that, too. It's made of mud brick. God, it must be over 100 years old. It's just amazing to see. The roof is all collapsed on the inside.
And it's not very wide either. What would you say, about 10 feet, 15 feet? 15 feet wide.
On the inside.
Yeah.
Probably 40 foot long.
And this is in the village at the foot of that mountain where the footprint is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the name of this village?
Well, I'm always having trouble with it. It's Sulku, S, how do you spell it? S-U-L-L-I, no, S-U-L-L-K-I-T-I-R-I, Sulkitiri. It's Aymara, and I'm told that what it means is a young brown-colored puma.
Okay. All right. Pretty exciting stuff here. And I think what we're going to do is I think we're going to, at this point, go ahead and open the telephone lines. The audience is invited to participate in the show, and you do that by giving us a telephone call, okay? Now, I'm working at the moment on getting the telephone number up on the screen, and then we'll ask you to call. I'll go ahead and give you the number, and then it will appear on the screen here in just a moment. 623-444-5889. That would be the number to call, 623-444-5889. And if you're in the USA or Canada, please use that telephone number. And if you are outside of the USA or Canada, use the telephone number, or you may use the flash message option on the website. All right, let's go to the telephone. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hello, Steve.
Hey, good evening. And Jerry and Kathy, wonderful to see you. Glad to see you safe and nearly ready to come on home. Fascinating work you've done. You know, as a student of history, one of the things that that I've discovered, and I think almost anyone will discover if they study it in depth enough, is that the narrative, the historic narrative that that the publishing houses that publish the history books, the narrative they let come through is a very narrow one, you know, and it has to adhere to a story that will keep us kind of ignorant and dumbed down as to true origins, true antiquity, the interrelatedness of different cultures, and how far back they went, and their achievements, and so on. And so, if you really want to get anything new, anything outside of the official story that they let come through, which is so bogus, it's ridiculous, and it's designed with an agenda. If you want anything new, it's got to come from people that aren't, shall we say, establishment historians and establishment storytellers that are, you know, far from the truth. So what you guys are producing here, you know, number one, this footprint and how old it is, and then this bowl with the Semitic languages and the connection that you have intuitively made between Troy and this part of the world, and maybe an interconnectedness with the Templars. You know, it's interesting that King Priam of Troy had his god was Apollo, who was a sun god. His daughter Cassandra was a high priestess of Apollo, and she supposedly had actually met and nearly slept with Apollo, and he bore a very strong resemblance to the sun gods of this area, you know, of Peru and Bolivia. Their god was a sun god. And there are just some staggering parallels between the religions and the images of their gods and the stories that they tell about their gods. You know, it's amazing, the parallels. And yet they were so geographically far removed from each other. And this was before the days, of course, of the Internet or broadcast TV or the satellite connections and so on. You know, this is way before that. So the connection had to have been very, very real because the stories are so similar, you know, and they're so geographically removed from each other. So it's wonderful that you guys are making this connection and presenting it the way you're presenting it. I doubt if very many of the established experts will give you much reinforcement on what you're saying, because it's going to lead a lot of the masses astray from the prescribed narrative, you know, that we're supposed to follow, that keep us dumbed down and obedient slaves to our masters. So thank you again, Jerry and Kathy, for all the things that you've done and continue to do, and I sure hope you have a safe flight coming back.
No, thank you, Steve.
Thanks a lot.
And Kevin, thank you for making this information available to us on your show. You know, this is tremendous.
Helps if I push my microphone button. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. And for those who are outside of the USA and outside of Canada, if you would like to participate, please do. You can call that number or you can use the flash message option. But if you're in the USA or Canada, the telephone number is the way to go. The Aymara are the ones that are also in charge of the doorway, aren't they?
Yeah, it's on their land.
Uh-huh. Now, is it in Bolivia as well?
No.
No.
Okay. It's probably 3 hours. We just rode it 3 hours north of Desaguadero, which is the border town between Peru and Bolivia.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, Jerry, Kathy, this is Brent from Wyoming again.
Hello, Brent.
Hey, Brent.
Hi, guys. I actually have a couple of questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
When you came down off that mountain, did you have a controlled crash?
A controlled crash?
At the bottom.
Oh, well, we got down to we got down to the bottom, and we could actually breathe better.
And Jared discovered he forgot his sunglasses up on the top.
And did you go back for them, Jerry?
Yeah. Oh, no. Are you kidding me?
No, the guy did.
I laid them right next to the footprint when I was on the phone to you.
Yeah.
Because I tried to put my hat on, because the sun is just like beating down. It just stings. So I tried to put my hat on when I had you on the sat phone. Well, it has this long stem of an antenna. My hat was like sticking off to the side. So I took it off, took my sunglasses off. And I'm talking to you, and then when it's over with, it's like, we have got to hurry and get out of here because the border is going to close at 7, and you do not want to be at Desaguadero at night. You don't.
Why is that?
Oh my gosh. Kevin, this is, you know some of these border crossing towns. They're full of riffraff, drug dealers, thieves, murderers,
It's just not a nice place to be at dark.
There are no hotels. It's just horrible. There are just holes in the wall where you can climb in to sleep. So it's just awful. And cold. It's so cold you wouldn't believe it.
It was pretty cold. It was in the 30s.
Uh-huh. And anything got as cold as it would get. So anyway, we got there. We discovered it closes at 8.
Yeah.
Well, that was good. Brent, you got another question, right?
Yes, I do. I've mentioned this on the moon riding your son saw down in, I think it was Peru. Is it possible to take to, I can't do it yet, but is it possible to astral project and record the writing on that bowl?
Well, I suppose it would be. I think it'd be easier just to look at the pictures on the internet.
It's probably true. I'm just thinking if you wanted to get the full text in order, that might be an option if you couldn't find a full panorama of it on the internet.
Sure. Well, you know, what John and Sally Tudor have told us is that there were several different dialects, and there are key phrases or key symbols that tell you what dialect it is. And from what they've been able to see on the internet, they've not been able to pick out those key phrase or key symbols for the phrasism and dialect that's on that particular bowl, which makes us wonder, whoever decoded that bowl, deciphered it rather, maybe they didn't, you know, have the things just as they needed. And that's why we wanted to get better pictures, better images, get a more comprehensive study on this.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened.
Well, I have one more request. Be safe and take care on your way home.
Thank you, buddy.
Okay, bye.
All right, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. We have here with us this evening a couple of folks who really are Indiana Jones in real life. Indiana Jones was a great series of movies. These folks are the real thing. And, they go into some very dangerous places, take some pretty big risks that I'm all the time telling them, don't do that. Don't do that. And they do it anyway. It's a great opportunity for you. To be in touch with some amazing individuals here. There aren't too many like them on the planet. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Doc in Arkansas.
Hello, Doc in Arkansas. How are you?
I'm just here tonight. Enjoying listening to the conversation of Jerry and Kathy and you.
Good.
And I can just imagine, I cannot wait, Jerry, I cannot wait to see the videos and everything, all your stuff that you recorded and all that. I cannot wait to see pictures and everything.
Well, thank you, Doc. I appreciate it, Kathy. I know she appreciates it as well.
Yes, I do.
We're kind of thinking, instead of making three different small episodes, turning this into one long movie. So we're not sure how we're going to break this down into...
All right, we have to take a break, but we'll come back. Doc, can you hang on?
Yes, I can.
All right. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this break, so don't go away.
She's always had a hold on me, but only passage of time that makes a faraway look in your eyes. When there's no one remembers the day, you can be whatever you want to say. When everything is said and done, you were probably just foolish and young. If the sound disappears from your head, you should assume your youth is fine. Just as they now appear. If there were flowers, then I doubt that any ever grew down here.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guests this evening, Jerry and Kathy Wills, live from Lima, Peru, on the telephone with me, live from Arkansas. Doc, you still with us, Doc?
Yes, I am, sir.
Okay. Let me tell you something about Doc, Jerry. Doc had surgery, and I won't go into all of what that's about, but it was pretty serious surgery. Just got home from the hospital today, and here he is on the Kevin Smith Show talking to you.
Well, our best wishes to you, Doc. Yeah.
Well, it's always good when you have somebody to listen to good. You know, it's kind of hard to listen to him when he's in the hospital.
Yeah.
Especially over the weekend.
Yeah. Okay, now, Doc, was your question answered, or do you have another question?
My other question was asking is, now, on these videos and everything he did, I heard him say that he was going to break it down maybe in two portions or something. Now, is that going to be like hitting your website, Jerry, or is it going to be like on YouTube or something like that?
No, it'll be on our website, and everything on our website that we put up is free.
Okay.
So it'll be available for anyone to watch, wants to watch it. We do have a member section where you can actually download the videos for yourself and some other features as well. But it'll be up there for everyone to see. And what I was talking about, Doc, is we covered three different stories this trip. We covered the Doomsday Stone in Tocachi. We covered part two of Kumbh Mayo, which was a bit of a disappointment. And we covered this footprint story. So I don't know if we're going to make it into one long video where it really just shows, you know, this entire journey, which is now going on now 37 days, 40 days, and lost track.
Okay.
Or if I'm going to break it down into three separate episodes.
I appreciate you.
Go ahead, Doc.
No, I was just saying, I appreciate you guys. You be safe on your journeys home. And may bless you, sir, and your wife.
Thank you.
Thanks, Doc. All the best to you, man. Yeah, I know about Doc's situation because he and I talked on the telephone a couple of times. We talked on the telephone before he went to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And then he called me today and he said, well, I'm home from the hospital. But he had some pretty serious surgery. And we're glad he's home, and sounds like he's doing well, and hope he recovers completely and rapidly. All right, folks, 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. You know, Jerry, you're talking about these videos. One of the things that I like about your videos, I mean, they're fabulous, just they just really are. They take us into places that most of us are never going to go, even though I've traveled all over the world. And there are places, mysterious places, similar in nature and remoteness and danger to what you go. I choose not to do that. You know, if I have to climb a mountain, that's some place God did not intend Kevin to be, or he would have put me there, you see. And so, but it's fascinating. But what really is cool is the things you find along the way you didn't expect to find, the things that like the footprint. You didn't expect to find this footprint, but bang, there it is, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's almost like the universe said, okay, the archaeologists came in, or whoever they were, and they stole the other one. But, hey, Kathy, look over here. You know, and there's another one. And it's really cool. I call it the side stuff, you know, that you didn't expect, and you weren't going there to look at that because you didn't know about it, but you find it. And really, this Doomsday Stone that you mm-hmm. talk about, that was a surprise the first time you saw it. You didn't expect to see that the first time. And of course, now you've been able to go back with video equipment. And how has have you gotten a chance to look at any of the video that you shot of that?
Just on the camera, it isn't the same scope of being able to view it when you're looking at still a little bitty, you know, viewfinder.
How does it does it appear that you got some great video of it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. We spent quite a bit of time there. The mountain wasn't as high as the last one we climbed.
Yeah. And it was going through the jungle.
Yeah.
You know, the part we probably should have videotaped in that particular segment is how I lost the spot GPS beacon.
He's always losing things.
Well, it fell off of the little bracket that I had on my shoulder on the camera bag. A bush or a limb just snagged it and knocked it off. I didn't know. And we searched for that thing for an hour, and I couldn't find it at all. And one of the guides that was there just walked up the path a little bit, picked it up, and says, "Here you go. Here it is." And he had left before me, so it wasn't like he had seen it fall off. You know, it was he just went right to it. It was amazing.
Well, I don't know.
We were happy.
Yeah.
Do what? What did you say? Happy. I talked on top of you. I couldn't hear what Kathy said.
Oh, I just said we were happy. We noticed it was gone off the. Off his shoulder bag when we did, because if we would have gotten clear down to the village, we would have never known where to look at all. But it was only like a couple feet from where we had started walking back down the mountain. So
your guide was a native guy, right? Native to the area.
Yeah.
You know, I've mentioned this before. When I was in East Timor, if you're going to go through the jungle, but most particularly at nighttime, but at any time, if you're going to go through the jungle there, you need one of the local native people in front of you. And the reason is they will see things you cannot see, and they see them very clearly. You won't notice, but they will. And, you know, all of a sudden you see that machete come out and whack, and then you see a snake head, you know, falling off to the right.
Yeah.
You never even saw the snake, you know.
Right.
And they see things that you and I won't see, and it's because that's home. They see something that's also, not supposed to be there.
Also, they hear things, too, that you're not accustomed to listening for.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an amazing thing when you go into an area that over here in the West, you know, with our cities and our cars and our airplanes and all our gadgets, the people here would describe that area as primitive. Well, it may be primitive in terms of its technology, but the people are not stupid, not at all. And, you know, all you got to do is figure if they turn you loose in the jungle without a guide, would you make it? Well, a whole bunch of Westerners have been out there in that jungle and didn't come back, you know.
Yeah. We know what it's like. You would have trouble making it out of there.
Mm-hmm. And yet they do it every day. It's just daily life for them. So they are very sophisticated in their environment, and they really know their stuff. And I bet you that you ran into a lot of those people that over here in the West, the people, when I say the West, well, that is the West, but I mean, you know, in Western civilization, people would say they are primitive. But I bet you met a bunch of them that speak way more than one language.
Yeah,
right.
They do. They speak, you know, 2, 3, 4 languages. Here's something really interesting. Speaking of languages, Aymara. The Aymara language is a derivation of Japanese. We just found this out. It's just astonishing.
A derivation of Japanese. So... Yeah. Now we've got Japanese, we've got Vikings, we've got Trojans, we've got Templars. Who else we got in the neighborhood out there?
The
Phoenicians.
Chinese, actually.
The Chinese?
The Chinese, they traveled from up in Canada, mm-hmm. all the way down through Central America, and we are pretty sure through South America, because they were on... a very long mission to accurately measure time.
Mm-hmm. So that means that South America was exposed to a whole lot of different cultures from around the world early on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, consider this, Kevin. Jade is a sacred stone to the Asian world. And the best jade mines are in Ecuador. There are jade mines in Ecuador, and it's very easy to find evidence of the Asian community being there in very ancient times getting jade. So,
well, and, you know, so it, here's another thing that's interesting. It doesn't seem that they came in and obliterated the indigenous cultures.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until the conquistadors that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, from what we know about the Phoenicians coming into South America and some of the other cultures they visited, they had a policy that they would stop at an island and they would wait there on that island for something like 90 days. If no one got sick, then they would make contact with the culture that they were setting up to do trade with. If somebody was sick, they wouldn't contact them because they'd be spreading disease cross-culturally. This is just a common practice that they had.
That was the Phoenicians?
When there was a volcano that erupted. That's the Phoenicians, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why the Inca knew that they welcomed the Spanish, because they had already had contact with these white men with beards.
Okay, well, folks, as you can hear if you're listening and see if you're watching, we just lost our connection with Jerry and Kathy, but we are trying to reconnect, and we will. Isn't it interesting, though, that you had the Phoenicians, and that way back then, centuries back then, they were self-quarantining themselves to make sure that they didn't bring disease and death to the people they were going to try and contact. That's pretty smart. And it's way advanced, way ahead of their time, at least we think. You know, I mean, that's not the kind of thing we would imagine the Phoenicians doing. Phoenicians existed, back at the time of King Solomon, all right? And so,
there we go.
We have a connection back now with Jerry and Kathy. I was just commenting the thing with the Phoenicians doing self-quarantine to make sure they didn't spread disease to the people they were contacting is really an advanced concept. All right, we have to step away for a break now that you're back, and we will be back right after this.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guests this evening, Jerry and Kathy Wills, live from Lima, Peru, and freshly back from the mountaintop there in Bolivia. And we're talking about some pretty amazing stuff discovered by these explorers, Jerry and Kathy Wills. And we have a caller on hold. Jerry, had you finished what you were saying, or can we take the call?
Go ahead and take the call.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi, John.
Hi to Jerry and Kathy.
Yeah, they said hi to you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm really appreciating this really large narrative that they're starting to pull together. I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, you're talking about with the Templars and the Vikings and the Trojans and all that?
Well, yeah, there's so many streams involved in it. It's pretty amazing, and they got evidence for it, so go for it.
Let me tell you something, John. Jerry shared with me a lot of the detail and what kind of documentation there is. And I can only tell you, this looks like the real deal.
Well, it's pretty amazing, and it just affirms the idea that you know, our ancients crossed the oceans and were in contact with each other. So that just affirms that whole notion.
Yeah, yeah, and you know. I said earlier, when they go on these expeditions, it's the side stuff that they didn't expect to find, and they always find something they didn't expect. It's that side stuff that just blows my mind, like this additional footprint.
Right, yeah. I just wanted to make one comment about the footprints.
Uh-huh.
Being dated at around 1.5 million years.
Uh-huh.
Well, I remember in anthropology class quite a few years ago, in Australia, they had what they called the gracile humans, which were anatomically very modern, which were dated at around 1.5 million years.
Uh-huh.
And so I just wanted to tell Jerry that... you know, it's already known in Australia that modern-looking humans are that old. So it's not like it's something unusual. It's what, already been discovered in Australia.
What is unusual, though, is to find it on this side of the world.
Right. That's mm-hmm. right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, John. Any other question or comment?
No, that's it.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is unusual to find it on this side of the world, and they try their best to make sure we don't find it. But, you know, the theory about the populating of North America, you know, that the prevailing theory is that while there was this ice bridge, you know, between what is today Siberia and Alaska, that these people came across that ice bridge and then they over many, many, many years spread out across North America and then Central America and then South America. But you see the development of villages and towns and technology goes the other direction. It doesn't come from the north and head south. It goes from the south and heads north. The first cities in the Americas were in South America and Central America, you know, and they weren't just villages. There were villages too, but these were big metropolitan cities. As a matter of fact, which city was it that What's the name of the city in on the island there in Lake Titicaca?
Oh, it's the Island of the Sun. Are you talking about that?
Yeah, the capital city there.
Tiwanaku?
Yeah, is that where? Right there on the island in Lake Titicaca.
No. Tiwanaku is just.
No, I'm not talking about Tiwanaku.
Really,
I'm not talking about Tiwanaku. I'm talking about the capital city that the conquistadors came to, and they were amazed at how urbane it was.
It must have been the Island of the Sun. I don't know that off the top of my head.
Yeah, they were amazed at the causeways that went out to the island, and the you know, they got out there and were amazed at the temples and the palaces, and you know, but these urban centers in South America were bigger than anything in Europe at the time, and mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Population and civilization went from South America northward. It didn't come from Alaska and move south. Civilization went the other direction.
One of the things that we've noticed is that the Eskimos have a very close resemblance to the people on the Altiplano. They look very much like them.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What about culturally?
I haven't studied it enough to really address that.
Uh-huh. Well, I think it's amazing, really, really amazing. And it's something that people in South America and all the South American countries should be very, very proud of. And it's something that, you know, here in North America, there is a tendency to think of this as all just old ancient stuff and they were primitive people. They were way more advanced and civilized than anything that was going on in North America at the time. And you know, and people in South America should be very, very proud. In Central America, very proud of these ancestors who were more advanced in many, many ways than Europe was at the same time. And
sure,
you know, and they knew about the world. They were doing trade with people from all over the world.
Yeah, and then there was something that happened that caused all of that to crumble and fall apart. So something terrific that took place. Well, I don't know that it was just one thing. Probably several things took place over a period of time. And that brings us to the third thing that we were investigating.
Okay, you have to do it real quick.
Well, we'll save it for another show, because we have this is a very interesting topic. It can't be done quickly, but it has to do with Great Britain being completely burnt to ashes.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll do that in another show. Maybe when you guys get back, we'll do that in a show.
Yeah, we'll get the information assembled, because this story reaches from Norway and Great Britain all the way across to the demise of the Mayan civilization, and it is. Ends up at Tiwanaku.
Ah, all right. Well, I want to thank both of you for being with us this evening. It's been fabulous, but we're out of time, so we're going to have to run. If you will, stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this in for a close. Ladies and gentlemen, real-life Indiana Joneses. And I can tell you, if you plan on keeping up with these Joneses, you got a lot of climbing to do. All right, that's pretty much going to wrap it up for this evening. I appreciate Jerry and Kathy for being here and for sharing the pictures and the updates. And we look forward to them getting back to the States, and we'll have them on the show when they get back. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.